Welcome to this episode of Ours to Protect on WLR.
Hello and welcome to Ours to Protect. I'm Clodagh Walsh, and each month for the next 6 months I will be taking a look at climate change initiatives and events happening across Waterford. Today it's about celebrating entrepreneurship and sustainability. Green entrepreneurship, which aims to create and implement solutions to environmental problems and to promote social change so the environment is not harmed.
I found it hard to realise how other people weren't seeing the negatives associated with this overconsumption, constant overconsumption of things. That really struck something in me, and I was like, this is really, really wrong, and I'd like to be able to take a stand on it.
That's the voice of Breathe Hennigan, a student at SETU Waterford, a passionate advocate for the circular economy, particularly when it comes to fast fashion. My name is Anna Cassan, I'm from Waterford and I'm studying journalism at UL. Like Breathe, I have an interest in how we live and in how we can take responsibility for our actions and influence others when it comes to sustainability. Over the next half hour, you will hear from Breathe and how the work of the Growth Hub at SETU is impacting young entrepreneurs.
There is a view from some parts of the world that the environment is infinite and that we can do what we like. But the damage done today to the world has only been created in the last 100 years, which is the period of the Industrial Age, or the last 150 years. Before that, humans lived in harmony with nature, and we have to get back to living in harmony.
I think entrepreneurship and sustainability are very good bedfellows, because it is about coming up with solutions to problems that are there and then acting on them in a way that will benefit other people.
A lot of young women don't think of themselves as entrepreneurs. You know, traditionally you would see the men doing things like that. Entrepreneurial traits are seen as more masculine, whereas, you know, there's huge opportunities for women to bring something to the table and to even it up. And, you know, even if you think about how they're motivated, it's like empathy and collaboration and all those traditionally female traits bring a huge amount to the entrepreneurial sector.
They're the voices of Michael Flynn, Chairman and CEO of FLI Global, Dr. Margaret Tynan, Growth Hub Lead at SETU, and Tammy Darcy, Founder and CEO of the Shona Project, all of whom took part in the recent Inspire Fest event at SETU. The event was run in conjunction with the Growth Hub Project. Dr. Margaret Tynan.
The Growth Hub project is a HCI-funded project from the Government of Ireland, and it's a collaboration between ourselves and Technological University Dublin. So there's a Growth Hub up there and there's a Growth Hub down here in SETU. So I'm leading the SETU Growth Hub. What we do is we support students who have an interest in entrepreneurship. That interest sometimes can just be a curiosity. Sometimes we have students who, when they join us here in SETU, they already have a business, or some of them have a little side hustle, as I might call it. But for others, it's through projects that they're doing that they realise, oh gosh, there's potential in this, or it could be again through hobbies that they have. So we act as a support for students that if they have an interest in setting up their own business and they want to learn a little bit more about it, we provide kind of advice, we run workshops, we run programmes that will support them. Not all students study entrepreneurship as part of their programme. So while we're based in the business school, we actually support students at all levels, regardless of the programmes that they're studying in college.
Margaret describes the Growth Hub as a creative space, a space where they want to develop the capacity in their students to be entrepreneurial in their own lives, in the lives of others and in business.
We do that through a combination of working with their lecturers in the programmes that they're on, and custom designing workshops around what they're studying, or running kind of fun events. So today is all about trying to create that sense of fun and interest and energy around entrepreneurship. But with that, we're trying to address a number of different strands. So we had social entrepreneurship. We mentioned cultural entrepreneurship. We had those looking for dedicated business opportunities. We're now looking at sustainability and opportunities that are coming up through that. So we are trying to be quite broad, I think, in terms of exposing students to the many different ways that you can use those entrepreneurial skills.
Student Breathe Hennigan is a passionate advocate for sustainability and the circular economy, particularly fashion. It was the Green Schools Initiative in primary school that first sparked her interest. But a combination of business studies, COVID and social media led Breathe to take a closer look at what opportunities there might be in the area of sustainability.
I started looking at information that was being shared on particularly Instagram and then kind of moved to TikTok. And having always been eco-conscious, it kind of led me to find circular fashion. I would have always been really into my clothes, really loved my style, but I suppose over lockdown, looking at kind of all the hauls that I was seeing on TikTok, I kind of started to click that something really wasn't right, and I found it hard to realise how other people weren't seeing the negatives associated with this overconsumption, constant overconsumption of things, like little things. And it was funny because we weren't even going anywhere in COVID, it was just at home, and it was just that whole kind of I need more, that really struck something in me, and I was like, this is really, really wrong, and I'd like to be able to take a stand on it.
Not one to let an opportunity to educate and inform pass her by, Breathe took matters into her own hands in her own community.
I hosted Cocktails and Clobber. That was an event in the Rosamund Kind pub. That was to just promote circular fashion amongst people who may have not been exposed to it before. So that was run in conjunction with Oxfam, the Samaritans, Jack and Jill, Focus Ireland, where I had gone into each of their charity shops and picked out kind of curated pieces that I thought would cater to every demographic that would potentially be there. It was a night just to inform in a friendly way people who may have not been exposed to that kind of thing before.
Was there a positive response to that? Because probably a lot of people, they probably bring things to charity shops, but they may not take.
Yeah. No, I was honestly shocked. I couldn't believe it. We had such a great turnout and such a diverse turnout as well. Like, you had people who were in the GA club, you had people who would go to the pub normally, men and women, and a really, really diverse age range, and they all just seem to really kind of get into the spirit of it. Looking through the clothes, maybe without not even realising the education element behind it at first, but as the night went on, I really, really wanted to inform people of the kind of education piece behind why secondhand or circular fashion shopping is important. Research I'd done in college led me to there. Every event that I've held or will potentially hold, there always has to be an element for me of education into why we need to consume in this way and why we need to change our consumer habits.
Change can be challenging. But one person who has made a change to how things can be done is Waterford businessman Michael Flynn, chairman and CEO of FLI Global. Their mission? Protecting things that can never be changed. Michael was the keynote speaker at Inspire Fest, and leading a successful engineering business, he spoke to the students about his experiences starting out and how he got to where he is now. I spoke to Michael in a busy SETU reception, and I first asked him to tell me about FLI Global.
FLI Global is an environmental solutions company, a broad-based environmental solutions company that works on projects globally and has done since I founded the company in 1989, actually going back to 1987. So we have a long history of projects around the world, always associated with groundwater protection or remediation of former industrial land to bring it back to a new use and make it safe from a contamination-free point of view.
And Michael, going back to 1987, now we're talking about sustainability, you know, say in the last 10 years. Did you always know that that was the space you wanted to be in, and how or why did you know it?
The word sustainability wasn't used frequently back then, but environmental protection was. So my first exposure to environmental protection was in working on projects in America in my first job, where the Environmental Protection Agency were the regulator of those projects. So I saw firsthand how important the EPA viewed the environment. I got to see Love Canal, which is one of the worst disasters in America for contamination of soil.
From 1947 until 1952, the Hooker Chemical Company used the Love Canal section of Niagara Falls as a dumping site for toxic waste.
President Carter declared a state of emergency today in the Love Canal area of New York's Niagara Falls, where toxic chemicals were discovered oozing from the ground.
That discovery in a Niagara Falls neighborhood triggered an environmental battle that played out on national television and became one of the most iconic in U.S. history. After the federal government finally evacuated hundreds of families, new laws were introduced to prevent future love canals.
Occidental Chemical Company agreed to pay $129 million.
My three kids were born with birth defects. My wife's had cancer.
There have been instances of birth defects and miscarriages among neighborhood families.
The state had been testing the neighborhood's air, soil, and groundwater and made an announcement for the homes closest to the canal.
The New York State Health Department recommended that pregnant women and children under the age of 2 immediately move out of the area.
How many chemicals have been identified as being underground here?
So far, we know of 88 specific chemicals that have been identified.
And of those 88, how many are suspected of causing cancer?
I think the number is 11.
That opened my eyes to a whole new world, I think, and opportunity. Sustainability has only come to be used together with environment possibly in the last 10 years, in that we're all of us now have to operate in a sustainable way in order to sustain our future as humans, that is, not just our future as local businesses.
So who is your team? Who works for you?
We have lots of different engineers, like environmental engineers, geotechnical engineers, process water engineers, mechanical engineers, civil engineers. These are all the people who design the solutions that we offer to our clients. The food and beverage industry, for example, would be one. So we have lots of big Irish companies involved in food and beverage. So they're very interested in water reuse that they use in their processes every day. So water reuse is now a big part of every food manufacturer to try and improve the quality of water where it can be reused and it's no longer wastewater, which is a cost, and wastewater has often been allowed to contaminate rivers and streams as well. So that's a new part of the whole sustainable way of operating.
Listening to you speaking, you were talking about land, air, and water. We don't own it, almost like the Native American Indian way of thinking, we've only borrowed it. I thought what was interesting was you just didn't talk about reclaiming the land. You talked about reclaiming the land because it's for housing, because people need decent jobs, they need decent places to live. So it is circular, isn't it?
It is circular. There is only so much land in the world. Our human population is going to increase by 3 billion people up to 2050. That's a UN statistic, not mine. So where are all those people going to live? A lot of those people will be born in Africa and Asia, not in Europe. Housing is going to have to be provided by those people in those countries, and they're the countries at the moment who pay little attention to the environment. Lots of mining goes on in Africa, no remediation. Asia is still quite lax in general. So there is a concern that the availability of land is finite. So reusing land, using technology, is a way to provide land for housing and for human development. Protecting rivers and streams from contamination from those same industries is a way of producing clean water. Both those things are essential for the sustainability of human life.
It was a busy day at the Inspire event, from workshops to swap shops to panel discussions to talks. And among those taking part were two of SETU's entrepreneurial ambassadors for the Growth Hub, Tammy Darcy, founder and CEO of the Shona Project, and John O'Connor, CEO of Collect Waste Collection Platform.
We're asked by the college to come in, and obviously it's a privilege to be asked in the first place based on our experience in business. And I suppose it's to give back to students through getting involved. Like, we've been at a number of events here in the college where we've done talks on our entrepreneurial experience and what we've learned on the journey. But we're in the waste industry, and the waste industry, especially in Ireland, is very much focused on the circular economy. We have junk businesses and skip businesses as part of the Collect Group. So the man in the van service, and you can be guaranteed when we come to your house house, you know, what we put in the van and what we bring back to the yard is recycled and upcycled, you know. And I suppose the government are very good in incentivizing this behavior. Do you know, it's in all waste companies, you know, it's favor to make sure that little or nothing goes to landfill. So it's a huge area and it's a very innovative area as well, I'd say.
And in that space, John, from the time you started to now, have you seen big changes in that space, and are they good changes?
Yeah, they're very good changes. Yeah. Well, just even from, you know, I think the awareness from homeowners as well to make sure that you use a licensed contractor, and, you know, that homeowners will ask you where the waste is going and what happens, and they're very much engaged in the whole process. So, you know, everyone feels that responsibility to make sure that, you know, as much of the waste in their homes and in their businesses are recycled.
For me, this opportunity is a real full circle moment because I worked here. I studied here while I was working here, and even when I was starting the Shona project, I had great support from the community here. So many mentors. So it's, you know, an honour for me to be able to come back. I think for me, a lot of young women don't think of themselves as entrepreneurs. You know, traditionally you would see the men doing things like that. And also, if you look at the motivations for women, I think entrepreneurial traits are seen as more masculine. Whereas, you know, there's huge opportunities for women to bring something to the table and to even it up. And, you know, even if you think about how they're motivated, it's like empathy and collaboration and all those traditionally female traits bring a huge amount to the entrepreneurial sector.
And Tammy, when you're dealing with young women, do you find that they are, that they're conscious now, more conscious about climate change? And I know there are also statistics about that they worry too much about it. But how does that fit into your ethos and what you do?
Yeah, look, young people now are really motivated by creating social change, even in terms of who they work for and how their values are instilled within that company. And I think any social issue that impacts our girls is something that we need to be on top of. So whether that's, you know, gender equality or diversity and inclusion, mental health. But they do care about sustainability, and it does feel overwhelming and a scary subject. So we play a really key role in empowering those girls to be the voices for change if it's something they're passionate about, but then also to make changes in their own lives and to make decisions about where they work and the impact that will have on the world in the future.
Tammy mentioned being a voice for change, having an active voice and thinking about the decisions you make and where they might take you. Well, student Breathe Hennigan is driven by a passion for social impact and sustainability.
From running Cocktails and Clabber, I applied to go on Activism on Track, which was hosted by Oxfam, which was an international trip from Hamburg to Copenhagen, where we took part on a train workshop all about how young people can have a voice in climate action and climate change. And that was kind of my first experience with interacting with different youth groups associated in climate action. And that was just revolution. Like, it totally transformed my whole idea and vision on how young people can have such an active voice in it. I think it's difficult when you're from Ireland and everything is kind of either central to Dublin or Cork. It's hard when you're in a rural area to really find your network and find your connections. That trip was amazing. We ended up in Copenhagen, where we got to attend the Wellbeing Economy Conference, and just the networking and speaking to people who were kind of, I tend to find sometimes I have a bit of imposter syndrome. So I suppose having people there to kind of reevaluate your ideas that, yeah, you're doing the right thing, you're going in the right direction, keep going. It was amazing. From that trip, I was then offered the opportunity to become an Oxfam Youth Ambassador. That has just totally exploded for me. I've taken part in so many different opportunities since being a youth ambassador. Tomorrow I'm actually travelling to Cork with Oxfam to take part in the Ground Up Climate Forum. So again, that's Activism on Track in Ireland. So we'll be inviting loads and loads of different youth ambassadors from different organisations involved in climate action from Europe to come to Cork for a conference on how youth can have bigger impact in the discussion around climate action.
As Margaret Tynan explains, the Growth Hub is where students of SETU can learn the skills to have that impact.
within the Growth Hub have a dedicated week called Growth Hub Goes Green, where we look at bringing in guest speakers or running a design sprint that is very much sustainability focused in what we do. And in the Growth Hub, we very recently have been awarded funding to run a new initiative, which is called Innovate for Sustainability. Again, it's a collaboration with Technological University Dublin and the University of Galway. And over the next 18 months, we will be running out a number of different initiatives which are all around sustainability.
While the understanding of the environment has increased, Michael Flynn of FLI Global says we still need to be vigilant.
I think the awareness of the environment in recent times has become is probably the biggest change. But there's still a lot of climate deniers in the world, and that is very worrying, because it means that, you know, there is a view from some parts of the world that the environment is infinite, and that we can do what we like. But the damage done to date to the world has only been created in the last 100 years, which is the period of the Industrial Age, or the last 150 years. Before that, humans lived in harmony with nature, and we have to get back to living in harmony.
So young entrepreneurs starting out, what advice would you give to them?
The advice would be that if people have an idea or a passion, is to follow that, and is to seek the support of the mentors in the Growth Hub with a view to shaping their ideas, possibly turning them into businesses. And if the first idea doesn't work, it's to look to another one. The green environment and greenwashing is another. There is a lot of greenwashing going on in the world.
Greenwashing. It's a word we hear a lot in relation to the green economy. But what is it?
Have you ever bought something that claimed to be eco-friendly, only to learn later that it wasn't as green as it seemed? You may have encountered greenwashing, the practice of making a product or company seem more environmentally friendly than it really is. Greenwashing can be as subtle as vague labels, or as bold as misleading advertising. When companies exaggerate their eco claims, it's confusing and makes it harder to identify and support products that are genuinely sustainable. And greenwashing doesn't just impact consumers, it affects investors as well. Eco-conscious investors who hope to drive environmental progress by buying shares in green companies often find it difficult to distinguish genuine sustainability efforts from misleading ones. This confusion undermines investor trust, reducing corporations' incentive to adopt meaningful environmental practices. So, how can you spot greenwashing? Start by looking beyond buzzwords. Terms like natural, eco-friendly, or sustainable may sound good, but without clear standards or evidence, they don't mean much. Consider the big picture. Even if a product is advertised as green, evaluate whether the company as a whole prioritizes sustainability, or if the claim represents only a small part of its business. For instance, a company might highlight its use of recycled materials in one product line, while the rest of the operations rely heavily on unsustainable resources. Finally, transparency is key. Find out if a company's environmental claims are backed by data or third-party certifications. When you know what to look for, you can make more informed choices. By avoiding greenwashed products and investments, you help hold companies accountable, and that's a step toward creating real change.
So true environmental protection, I think, is very important, and it is a growth sector for new ideas, new technologies, and new entrepreneurs.
Now, we've been listening to student Breathe Hennigan. She's one of those entrepreneurs. But I asked her, when it comes to entrepreneurship, is it nature or nurture?
That's a really good question. I think it's a bit of both. Kind of taking the theory that I've learned here in college and actually experiencing it myself from kind of modelling how I would set up a social enterprise, it definitely does take, and it does require, a lot of drive and determination, especially when you're looking at setting up a social enterprise. Like, you're going to face a lot of criticism from people, and I usually find the criticism comes from people who are so stuck in their ways, in this instance, who love to overconsume, and that's true, they're no fault of their own. That's just the society and the world we live in today. We're constantly consuming, constantly wanting the next thing. But once you can kind of come to accept that you will have pushback from people, I think you just have to realize that you can start with the people you already know in your close network, and start with maybe say if they maybe wouldn't have come to event to an event before, getting them to an event and getting the face-to-face interaction with them and seeing then that change.
We say, come and have a chat. You know, come in and just bounce your idea around with us.
Margaret Tynan again.
Oftentimes the first idea isn't the idea people will run with. So it is giving them that opportunity to just explore different ideas. So, you know, no idea is off the table. In the Faculty of Business, we run an option where students can go on work placement or they can set up and run their own business for an entire semester. And even when students are contemplating that, you know, they might not have an idea. And I'd say, that's okay. We'll help you explore, you know, different opportunities so that you can find one that you would like to enact. So sometimes it's, you know, students may not have that belief in their own business idea. And it is, again, what Tammy had mentioned earlier today about sometimes putting limits on themselves, so shying away from it as an option. But, you know, if they do come to us, we're very open and we're there kind of just to guide them and sometimes to help them tease out those ideas to see, is there an opportunity behind it?
You know, there are people who always have ideas. They're almost like kind of serial entrepreneurs, if you like. But I suppose for the vast majority, and maybe I'm wrong, of students coming in, it's a skill that they can learn and hone, and that's what you're about.
Yeah, it is. So it absolutely is a skill, and the more you practice it, the better you will get at spotting opportunities. And I suppose the big difference then is those who act on it. And that is the differentiator. And in terms of acting on it, what we will do is we will help students identify what those steps are. But then it will be up to them as to whether they want to take that final move. But when they're here with us in SETU, they're in a scaffolded environment. So they have access to advice, they have access to knowledge, they have access to a space that they can do it. And, you know, we want to support students who do want to follow an entrepreneurial career path.
And let's leave the last word to student Breathe Hennigan.
It's just to know that, like, at times it will be really, really tough and you'll kind of look around and you'll go, sure, why am I bothering doing all of this if it's not going to make an impact? But I think the important thing to remember is no matter what you do, if you can do even a small thing each and every day, that's all playing into the bigger picture.
My thanks to Breathe, to Dr. Margaret Tynan of the Growth Hub at SCTU, and to all the contributors who took the time to speak to me. That's it for this month, and I hope you'll join me again next month for more Hours to Protect. Bye-bye.
Hours to Protect, brought to you by WLR, the IBI, and funded by Commission Amman. With the television license fee. For more info, see the sustainability page on WLRFM.com.